Big news from the Wisconsin Health Department. The state's 7-day average for COVID deaths now stands at zero. None. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent, and researchers are now taking what they've learned from the COVID vaccine to find out what it can do to cancer. As one researcher explains it in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, viruses and cancers are intimately intertwined in their biologies, and they both transform cells into proliferative monsters. And the breakthrough medical technology of the COVID vaccines has now paved the way for clinical trials for a potential cancer vaccine at the Medical College of Wisconsin. So what do you want to know about how these vaccines work? What doubts, if any, do you have left about vaccines? And do you believe we may be heading towards something akin to a cure for cancer in our lifetime? 1-800-642-1234 is the number to join our conversation this morning. You can email us ideas at WPR.org. Our guest is Dr. James Thomas. He's a professor of medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin, also the associate director for translational research at the Medical College of Wisconsin Cancer Center. Dr. Thomas, good morning to you.
Good morning, Lee. Thank you for inviting me.
I appreciate you joining me. We've got some good news ahead of us, but first I want to get an update on where you are with the clinics and how the pandemic has, from your perspective, affected cancer patients.
Well said, Lee. It's really fantastic to kind of be seeing the light at the end of the tunnel from what's been a very long and hard year and a half. As you're probably aware, the COVID pandemic has affected cancer patients and providers kind of disproportionately. People with tough illnesses, with compromised immune systems, have been especially isolated from their loved ones and caregivers, and it's been a rough go of it. And so now that vaccination rates are up and disease prevalence is going down, it's allowing some of those people that are already facing a difficult diagnosis and difficult treatment a little bit of respite as far as being able to be with the people they care about.
Sure, but have we seen patients prolonging their cancer diagnosis, doctor?
So, the question, Lee, I guess, is, you know, one of the things that's been a real concern during the pandemic is people not participating in their surveillance, right? So their colonoscopies and mammograms, their different preventive methods for catching cancer at an early level, that has really fallen off. And we're hopeful that people are going to pick up and make sure they get back up to date as far as getting that important cancer screening test done.
A nice, gentle reminder, Dr. Thomas, to take care of yourself. And the availability is there to do just that with, as you mentioned, a glimpse of the light at the end of the tunnel. So now on to this clinical medical trial from the Medical College of Wisconsin. And to set it up for us, Dr. Thomas, would you give us some idea of where our research currently stands as far as fighting cancers?
Well, I think as the listeners are aware, that we really made, you know, tremendous progress over the last years as far as treating cancer. And one of the main fundamental things that have improved is our understanding of the immune system and using the immune system in a variety of ways to treat cancer. And this is really a quiet revolution that's going on in cancer treatment. And this takes place in more than one aspect. We're going to talk about cancer vaccines in a moment, but really it's really a whole menu of immune therapy treatment approaches that are rapidly advancing and rapidly helping people have dramatic improvements in how they respond to their cancer. And so these include genetically modifying T cells. These are so-called CAR T cells, where we take people's white blood cells out of their body, genetically manipulate them to attack the cancer, and then reinfuse them back in the person. And this has been really a fundamental new treatment that the medical college in Frater has been leading in multiple myeloma, lymphoma, several other diseases. This has really had dramatic results as far as people with really no good therapies left over have exhausted all their treatment possibilities, and they've gone on to these trials and have had dramatic responses and complete responses sometimes to using these genetically modified immune cells. In addition, one of the great advances in the last few years is using immune checkpoint inhibitors. And this is basically our understanding of how cancer, you know, gets its way around the immune system, right? So the reason we don't have cancer all the time is because our immune system is constantly going around and cleaning up cells that are going rogue. And for a cancer to develop in the first place, it has to find a way to stop the immune system from clearing it, from killing it. And now that we figured out how cancer cells often do this, now we can take the handcuffs off the immune system and allow the immune system to get back in the fight. And so these therapies are still in the first few years of really showing their promise. And for some diseases like melanoma and kidney cancer and lung cancer, this has really led to substantial improvements in treatment outcomes for people with really tough diseases.
And when you're talking about these breakthroughs, Dr. Thomas, what's the timeline where we've seen these breakthroughs? Has it been just the last couple of years?
So several of these have been in the development for decades, but a lot of the clinical application has really come about in the last few years. And so for both of these immune checkpoint inhibitors, these genetically modified T cells, that has really become more the common treatment paradigms for cancer for a number of diseases. And now the challenge up ahead is to broaden the applicability, right? To make it so more people with cancer or with other cancers can benefit from these immune-based therapies. And that is partly where some of the new work with vaccines is also leading us.
We're talking with Dr. James Thomas about the future of cancer treatment. He's the Associate Director for Translational Research at the Medical College of Wisconsin Cancer Center. And if you have a question for him in the upcoming clinical trials, you can call us this morning at 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. What do you want to know about these vaccines? And what do you want to know about the science? It almost feels miraculous. And as you mentioned, Doctor, this is something that's been decades in the making, but we're seeing the advent or the breakthroughs just within the last couple of years. Is there a tie-in to the amount of medical research that went into developing these COVID-19 vaccines and how we're going to move forward in fighting cancers?
I think that's really an interesting story, Lee, because the COVID story is both the COVID therapies have benefited from cancer research, and then in turn, cancer research is going to benefit from the advances in COVID therapy. So these vaccine technology of using the messenger RNA, so a little snippet of nucleic acid, to try to get the immune system to produce a protein that the body can react to, is something that was developed for cancer vaccines. And so we look at Moderna and some of these other companies that have developed this therapy. It's really, again, been years in the making because it's a lot of individual steps that needed to happen. They needed to optimize how the chemical was made so that it wouldn't get clear too fast. They had to develop the nanotechnology so it would get into the right cells and then actually be translated so that the cells would make the protein that you want them to make and that the right cell would do that. And then finally, also, there's been a great advance in learning what the immune system gets excited about, what types of antigens are more likely to respond to the immune system are going to respond to. And so all those kind of individual steps and individual knowledge and has led to the COVID vaccines. But a lot of the background for this was actually from cancer vaccines that a number of these companies and a number of academic institutions have been working on to try to rev up the immune system, to get the immune system to go after cancer, oftentimes in combination with some of these other immune-based therapies that we discussed.
And Dr. Thomas, as we've been told about the COVID vaccines, it creates a blueprint for your immune system, tells it to go look out for these cells, and when it finds them, protect your body from them. And it sounds like this is much the same immunotherapy or checkpoint inhibitors that have been for viruses, cancers. It starts to seem very similar.
I say a lot of what we've learned about the immune system, how the immune system responds to viruses, a lot of that is translatable to how the immune system responds to cancers. And so each field, each area of scientific inquiry has informed upon the other. And so us learning the steps and learning what's important in viral immunity has led to understanding what types of T cells are involved, how antibodies are involved, what these cells, which are called antigen-presenting cells, which are really important cells that kind of set up the immune system to react to a foreign invader or a cancer cell that's gone bad that now has some mutated proteins that we can respond to. And the other advantage that these vaccines have is that they can actually be personalized and develop relatively quickly. So we know that everyone's cancer is different. And so my colon cancer may have different mutations, different things wrong in the DNA, different things wrong in the proteins than the person next to me. But that can be studied quickly, determine what are those mutations that my cancer has, and then which of those mutations the immune system is likely going to get react to, stimulated by, and then finally you can develop a vaccine that's personalized for that group of person or that individual person that is both specific for their cancer and also designed specifically that the immune system is going to get revved up about it.
Wow. Our guest is Dr. James Thomas. He is a professor of medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin, and we're discussing a new trial that will test new vaccines on patients with a form of lung cancer. If you have questions about it, we've got your answers this morning at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, and this is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. We now have a number of safe and effective vaccines for the coronavirus COVID-19, and, you know, none of us would want to imagine a world without them again. But now imagine a world with vaccines for some cancers. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and we already have vaccines for other viruses like hepatitis B and the human papillomavirus that cause cancer, so you can understand why medical researchers are so intrigued by clinical trials for a cancer vaccine built on the breakthroughs of the COVID-19 vaccines. Do you have questions about the science or perhaps the politics? What questions do you have about this clinical trial for a cancer vaccine? 1-800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Our guest, Professor of Medicine, Dr. James Thomas. He works at the Medical College of Wisconsin, where the one of five clinical trials will be taking place for this cancer vaccine. Dr. Thomas, tell us about the upcoming clinical trials.
Well, Lee, I think I want to talk a little bit about the trials in general. So we have over 200 clinical trials that treat cancer here at the Medical College of Wisconsin in Frederick. And more than half of those involve immune therapy, either CAR T cells, immune checkpoint inhibitors, or vaccines. And so there's vaccine therapies that are being developed in prostate cancer, pancreas cancer, lung cancer, as you mentioned. We can't talk about individual trials to patients because it's an experimental procedure, but just want to encourage people to ask their oncologist about what's available, access to clinical trials, you know, whether it's here or at another academic institution, because it's really a chance to access, you know, the therapies of tomorrow, to have access to those today. And like I said, there's really some palpable excitement around clinical trials and some of these advances that we think we're making steady progress, especially in immune therapy in general. And then how are these vaccine therapies going to augment immune therapy? Because in many cases, they're going to be used in combination, that the vaccine won't be just used alone, but it'll be used with an immune checkpoint inhibitor or with these genetically modified cells to try and make them work better. The other area that is more even early on in investigation is using them as a form of prevention. And again, this is really in the preclinical phase, but using these personalized vaccines, these mRNA vaccines, to have your immune system kind of preloaded to search for some common mutations and try to eliminate those cancer cells before they even develop a, you know, a demonstrable cancer.
So, Dr. Thomas, where are we in these clinical trials for this specific mRNA cancer vaccine? And as you mentioned, there are over 200 at the Medical College of Wisconsin ongoing. So where is this one?
So this one is coming along and will be open soon.
Okay.
But and there'll be others also. And so, again, try not to talk about an individual trial, but want to have people to talk to their oncologists, to talk about how clinical trials is really, you know, one of the best options for people with tough cancers, advanced cancers, and that they want to have that dialogue with their oncologist to see what's available in the region.
Dr. Thomas, how do oncologists know which trials are available with over 200 just at the Medical College of Wisconsin?
So there's a number of ways that people can access. So folks can access clinical trials across the whole country on a website called clinicaltrials.gov, where every clinical trial in cancer and even every disease is listed on that website. We also on the Frederick website have a portal where either physicians or patients can look for individual clinical trials that are open for their diseases. And then as always, you know, a lot of times the best time way is to get a second opinion or to talk with a healthcare professional about what's available and whether a clinical trial might be a good option for this individual with their cancer.
Where are you at personally, Dr. Thomas, considering you deal with this every day and we're talking about cancer, which is going to impact all of us in one way or another at some point in our days? Have you seen such breakthroughs that it's hard to, you know, you don't want to get your hopes up, but it's hard not to be excited about what you're seeing?
Well, say, as you said, it's a difficult field. And obviously, as we've talked about, cancer is really tied with heart disease for the number one cause of death, premature death in the state and in the country, where someone dies of cancer in the state almost every 45 minutes. And we still have a lot of work to do. And I have the great privilege to work with 200 scientists and physicians here at this medical college in Frederick, who are working hard every day to develop new therapies and new treatments. And it really is incredibly hopeful that we see that this year, that even with COVID, that we've been able to put a lot of patients on clinical trials to participate in advances. There's a multiple myeloma drug that we are heavily involved with, an immune therapy that involves these genetically modified T cells that is becoming approved, and other therapies that you have a part in that you allow people to have access to and participate in the fight for us to get better. And like I said, it's not a single step, it's a multiple of steps, but really there is palpable optimism out there for cancer treatments, but there's still a lot of work to do. And that work involves people working hard and people going on clinical trials, people funding clinical trials, so that we can continue to make advances. I am very confident that where we're going to be 5 years from now and 10 years from now is going to be substantially better than where we're at right now. And I think immune therapy, along with personalized medicine, are going to be the two pillars for which improved outcomes for cancer patients are going to happen.
So I'm not going to get my hopes up, but I'm going to remain excited about the medical breakthroughs that we are going to be watching for in the future. And I just bring it up because you know that cancer diagnosis is such a... You know what it is. And so to think about what is taking place at the forefront of medical science today may right here in our own backyard may provide some hope. And Dr. James Thomas, our guest, is here to do just that with your questions along the way. Do you have a family or friend that's battled cancer and survived or is taking part in one of these clinical trials? 1-800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Cheryl from Green Bay called, couldn't stay with us. She wants to know if the COVID vaccine can activate dormant conditions or diseases like rheumatoid arthritis. And we should talk about the safety and efficacy of these vaccines, doctor. So what can you say?
And certainly, Lee, not an area that I'm an expert in, as far as I'm not an infectious disease expert. But, you know, certainly it's early on with COVID. We know that it's substantially safe and that it's very effective at preventing what is now the third leading cause of death in the state, which is infection of COVID. As with any vaccine, there's going to be some incidence of side effects and things that we'll learn. And so we have to approach it with some humility and also with some inquisitiveness to make sure that we understand if there's a signal there, that we understand it, and so that we can learn from it for the next pandemic or the next vaccination that are going to take place. And so I think, again, I would probably lead that question to other people that know more about it than I do. But I know it's an area that people are looking into very closely.
And so how will you be measuring the effectiveness of this clinical trial? How do you, in context with the 200 others for cancer treatments at the Medical College of Wisconsin, what sort of data collection, how are you going to be watching this along the way, doctor?
Yeah, and as people are aware, clinical trials are very heavily regulated and scrutinized, and the majority of these trials are looking at efficacy as far as trying to either shrink people's cancer, keep cancer from progressing, people to see if they live longer with the treatment. In many cases, they're being compared, added to standard therapy to see if they see if it works better. There's very few cancer clinical trials that involve placebos. People know up front what they're getting, and kind of the rationale behind why we think this might be a good idea. And so some clinical trials, the early ones are for people that have kind of exhausted all their options. And then we want to make sure that it's safe, that the side effects are reasonable, and then try to find out if there's a signal there to see if the if the cancer is responding, to try to study it as much as we can so that the next clinical trial we can be better at. What do we add to it? How do we combine it with other therapies? Do we combine it with radiation therapy or chemotherapy to try and make it work better? One of the big areas right now is to combine immune therapy with some personalized medicine approaches where we turn off certain pathways in the tumor and then add immunotherapy to that. And it seems like that can make the immunotherapy work much better for more people. And so these are all areas that are just beginning to be looked at. There's some promise there. There's some signals that we think that there's an area that we need to explore more. And we're looking forward to the upcoming months and years that we keep adding to this body of knowledge and get better at how we treat cancer.
Dr. Thomas, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
It really was my pleasure. Thank you, Lee.
Dr. James Thomas, professor of medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin, with over 200 clinical trials for cancer treatments ongoing, also the associate director for translational research at the MCW Cancer Center. We're talking Bucks in Game 2 tonight next on The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Milwaukee and Phoenix? Who do you suppose will support basketball in those two cities? Two of the most faraway places on God's green earth. I mean, isn't Milwaukee close to Sheboygan? Those were the words of legendary broadcaster Howard Cosell from way back in 1968 when the National Basketball Association expanded to include the Bucks and Suns. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent. And fast forward to today, and the Milwaukee Bucks and Phoenix Suns are now competing for an NBA title. Game 2 is tonight at 8, and we're getting ready for tip-off. You, a longtime fan of the Bucks, do you have a favorite memory from the franchise's history? And what are your boldest predictions about the NBA Finals? Join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Our guest is Rick Schabowski, who chronicled the team's 1971 title season in the book From Coin Toss to Championship. And Rick, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm glad I could. What's some unprecedented times. It's great being back in the finals again.
It's been a long time. I mean, last time we were there was 1974, Rick?
Yes, and I am proud to say that I was also attending games then. I went to all the championship games in 1971, the home games, and also in 74. I'm going Sunday.
Oh, wow. Not just into the Deer Park, but you're going to be at the Fiserv Arena.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, take us back to Tuesday night in Game 1 when the Bucks dropped the opening game away at Phoenix against the Suns, 118-105. But this is nothing new for the Bucks in these playoffs. It's the third consecutive time in these playoffs that the Bucks have lost the opening game of the series. So what was your takeaway from Tuesday night, Rick?
Well, I came away with saying the same thing you did. Don't panic, Bucks fans. This has happened before. We've come this far. We're doing good. I mean, yeah, would you like to want a game? Granted. But then again, look, we were on the road. We had just played. We were down. We were tied 2-2 in a series with Atlanta. And, boy, Giannis goes down. It looks really tough. But how this team responded to win, you know, in Atlanta, win at home, and to win the series 4-2. And let's face it, they won this series on a Friday. Phoenix had already, you know, have walked, clinched their series. They're resting. They're staying home. And we're coming back home, flying back to Milwaukee on Saturday, and flying down to Phoenix again for a game Tuesday. It's physically demanding. So, and the main takeaway from this game on Tuesday is, yeah, we lost. But Giannis played.
Yes.
And he played a major role. I mean, maybe he looked a little rusty. That's no problem. The bones, I'm sure you'd be tough. We'd be out there if we were out there with some knee problems. We wouldn't even be able to make. But the thing is that he played a decent game.
It was right before halftime, like a minute before halftime, when he chased down a fast break of the Phoenix Suns, and he seemed to cover the entire court before blocking the basketball against the back of the basket. And then, you know, you realize right there that Giannis is back. He's not hobbled. He is actually returned in a way that you didn't think he might make it back in these playoffs when you saw that injury. In fact, neither did Giannis, as he talked about his injury after the game on Tuesday night.
I haven't watched the clip, but when the player happened, I thought I'm going to be out for a year, you know. So I'm just happy that two games later, I'm back.
Yeah, so I take it that you're happy, too, that Giannis is back, Rick.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's a franchise player. He's a two-time MVP. But one thing about this Bucks team, and in difference to 71 and 74 even, we have an awesome bench. Well, and people are also not realizing, and it's not brought up a lot, is that we could have used Dante DiVincenzo, too. He's a chemistry man, a good player, and he's been out for his entire playoffs. And, you know, we're doing well despite all these things.
It does. I mean, when you look at the keys to the NBA Finals for this Milwaukee Bucks team, do you see it more as their superstar, Giannis Antetokounmpo, or do you see it more along his supporting cast of Jrue Holiday and Chris Middleton, P.J. Tucker, Bobby Portis? What are the keys to the Milwaukee Bucks taking home the title this year as you see it, Rick?
Well, the key, like Lombardi said, team. Together, everybody achieves more. And they really are moving or meshed or a team. There's somebody hot. We have that many good players on your team. Someone's going to be cold. Someone's going to be hot. So, and we have and like you said, the bench. I think Portis, all these people off the bench have. Jeff Teague, the few minutes he plays, has really been a contributor. And they're really showing that this is a team effort. And Phoenix pretty has a good bench, too. Nothing against them. But. Yeah, it's not just Giannis, because we've won games without him. I mean, we proved that in the playoffs, like, against not chop-liver teams, playoff teams.
Right.
And we came through without him. And I think everybody guts up a little, tightens that belt. And, you know, you can see on the sidelines the animation, how Giannis is a real cheerleader, too. He's not going to be, you know, he's still going to suit up. He's going to be out there cheering him on and go, hey, let's go. But, like I said, don't worry, Bucks fans. It's a best-of-seven series. How many times, you know, if you lose one game on the road? And they showed some character coming back. Yadier getting whipped by 20 points. And he cut the single digits in the fourth quarter. So they showed character there, too, even though they were on a short side. They still were a good effort.
Game two is tonight, tip-off at 8, and we're discussing the 2021 NBA Finals with our guest, the author of From Coin Toss to Championship, Rick Schabowski, who chronicled the history-making 1970-71 season, but he's also going to the first home game of the NBA Finals for the Milwaukee Bucks on Sunday. Let's size up game two tonight if we can, Rick. Now, the one thing I noticed from game one was the Milwaukee Bucks defense for the Phoenix Sun Stars was we had our center on their point guard, Chris Paul. We had our center on their shooting guard, Devin Booker. What kind of changes do you see Coach Budenholzer making tonight in adjustments for game two?
Well, they're going to play a tighter defense. They're going to move around more. I think, well, he's been a good coach and coach of the year. He's going to make adjustments and see things, maybe zone, maybe isolate stuff, do things differently. And also for Phoenix, one of their backup centers also out, Sarek injured his knee. So another thing, like even like the Bucks when they play, they were red hot. You think Phoenix will hit all those shots? There's going to be adjustments, fade coming out, playing up, stepping up, and just hassling these people a little more on those jumpers, getting inside their head, making them, you know, work a little harder is all you need. All you could do is make up a couple points, a couple baskets, and you know, adjustments will be made, and coach knows what he's doing. They've adjusted to things before. You know, when you look at how they adjusted after losing Giannis and going on the road to Atlanta, geez. I mean, you know, going playing Atlanta and winning there, and he's a good coach.
Well, that was an exciting moment for me to see the Bucks make it to the finals without their superstar Giannis Antetokounmpo. But you mentioned getting inside your head when referring to the Suns. But Rick Schabowski, what about getting inside Giannis's head when it comes to the free throw line? This has been a running theme throughout these playoffs that Giannis takes too long at the free throw line, and the NBA should call him out for exceeding the 10-second limit of standing at the free throw line. And the fans at all the away games in these playoffs have been happy to let Giannis know. What sort of impact has that had on his head?
Well, you know, he's always, hate to say it, always been not a very good foul shooter. And the fans, I think he's shutting them off. They can count all they want to 11, 12 or whatever. I mean, there's a lot of rules that aren't enforced yet rigidly. Is it really that important? I'm sure there's other players too that, you know, take more time at the line. And I'm sure the pitch clock and baseball and all these other things. I mean, what are you going to do, start being a policeman there or stopwatch?
That's what the officiating's for, according to the opposing team's fans.
Yeah, I mean, look, but is that what it is? I think, you know, maybe that 11 seconds hurts him in the end. Maybe he should try getting it off quicker. But I'm sure coach is working with him on that. He's not the only guy. If you recall, Will Chamberlain was a bricklayer, amazing first class at the foul line, too, and he bricked a lot of shots.
So grateful for you for this half-century perspective. But since you've been following, you know, the Bucks and the NBA for so long, Rick, how much of this game is mental when it makes it to the court? Because when you're in the flow and you're on, and it seems like Giannis can just be in the flow when the game is happening, but when it stops dead in its tracks for a free throw and he's got his enemies and his teammates alongside the free throw line and he's shooting them up, it seems like it can get inside your head when you're playing basketball.
That's a very good point because it's you're going 90 miles an hour on the freeway. You're playing good. You're playing fast break, playing defense, getting back, doing things. The game is so high tempo, more high tempo than the other sport probably. Because football, you got huddles, this and that, baseball. But basketball is continuous action. And here you are moving, constantly switching roles from offense to defense. And then all of a sudden, like you said, Lee, take a free throw. And it's kind of a break in emotion, break in momentum
right.
to do that. So because you kind of, you know, so we had a bad day at the foul line on Tuesday. Today's a good day. And all we need is four games out of him. And we can do it. He can do it.
I mean, what was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar like out of UCLA? What was he? I mean, as he took the Bucks to the finals in just their first few years of existence, was there? I mean, can you make parallels to then and today, Rick?
Yeah, Kareem was a better foul shooter, obviously, and Oscar was a good foul shooter.
We Oscar really Robertson, yeah,
yeah, and that's the key thing. Like mentions in the book, and you mentioned earlier in your introduction. Yeah, it is Bucks and Phoenix. This is a rematch. We both came in the league the same year, the 1968-69 season. And we both had the worst records in our conferences in that first season. But the Bucks had won 27 games, and Phoenix had 16. There was no lottery then. They had a coin flip between our two arch rivals, Phoenix and Milwaukee. And because Phoenix had a worse record, they got to call the coin. So their fans voted and what to call, and they called it wrong. And so I remember Wes Pavlov, one of the Bucks' original owners, saying that, I like it when the other guy has to call and make the mistake, and I don't have to.
What's your bold prediction?
We end up with Lew Alcindor, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, but there we go with, Bucks and Phoenix again.
Absolutely. And here we are back more than 50 years later with the NBA Finals Game 2 tonight. Tip-off at 8 o'clock in Phoenix. And what are your boldest predictions for this NBA championship title? 1-800-642-1234 is the number to join our conversation. Make your predictions or tell us about your favorite stories and your favorite Bucks memories with our guest, Rick Schabowski, who chronicled the team's 1971 title season in the book From Coin Toss to Championship. I'm Lee Rayburn. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. So the fate of the Milwaukee Bucks started with a coin flip and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar way back in 1968. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and this team would win its first title since 1971. They haven't been back to the NBA championship games since 1974. And Kareem did not think the Bucks had a chance this season, saying he thought the statistics and the history were against this team. But, and I'm quoting him here, "The thing I love about sports is how often statistics and history get thrown out the window by the sheer heart and grit of an underdog team." Are you like Kareem, rooting for the underdog in these NBA finals? And where do you think Giannis Antetokounmpo ranks among Bucks greats? 1-800-642-1234 to join us. Email ideas at WPR.org. Rick Schabowski chronicled the team's 1971 season with his book From Coin Toss to Championship, with a half century plus of covering the NBA. Rick Schabowski, give us some perspective on where the association is today versus what you saw, what you experienced with the NBA when you first got involved.
Wow. Give me another hour. I can tell you how many things have changed. I mean, that the advent of the cable TV network really helped put the NBA on the map. Also, the rivalry that began in college between Larry Bird and Magic Johnson continued from Michigan State, Indiana State, continued in the NBA with the Lakers and the Celtics bumping horns often. I mean, when the Bucks played, they had a 7-game winning streak in that 70-71 season. They played the Knicks the day after Thanksgiving in Milwaukee at the arena here. And the games then were on, there was a game of the week. That's all they had. And part of the games were ABC's Wide World of Sports, and here's the NBA game. And that's all you got.
So mixed in with skiing and high jumping and all the rest, yeah, you might get a basketball game in there. Is it true that that we don't have video footage for some of the 1971 Bucks NBA Finals games?
Oh, there's footage out there. There's stuff out there you can search.
Okay.
As far as the entire game, I probably doubt it, though that could be the case. And the thing was, like, even we made a big thing about this Pfizer Forum, which is really neat. What a great thing to do. But the Bucks, when they played the Knicks, their nemesis that 70-71 season, it was a complete sellout. What they did is the Bucks put the game on closed-circuit TV at the auditorium next door. And that's how there was nothing on, you know, TV.
Right.
And so here we are at the Milwaukee Auditorium right next door watching the game on closed circuit. And it went well. And another thing I can say, I'll make a shameless plug. I think that Milwaukee fans are really in debt to Eddie Doucette. Did a really great job broadcasting these games, all these nicknames. And the Bucks promoted their team, too, with the Pepsi Fan Club and the Gold Bucks Gold Club. And they set a record for 27 wins as an expansion team. So this was just something that hasn't been paralleled again.
But yeah, and Rick, it would be hard to imagine expansion team winning a championship in just 3 years like the Bucks did out of the gate.
It was so great that that's where I wrote a book about it.
Exactly. Our guest is Rick Schabowski. He is the author of From Coin Toss to Championship, and we're getting ready for Game 2 tonight with the Milwaukee Bucks and Phoenix Suns in the NBA Finals in their best-of-seven series. And what is your best and boldest prediction, Rick?
Well, I got to go with the Bucks. Come on. But realistically, I believe they can do it. I mean, they showed heart coming back. Now, if Giannis was out, they still have a chance. Obviously, the odds are increasing with him performing at the level he showed on Tuesday. But I think they can overcome everything. I think coach can make adjustments. And, hey, the players are going to play it all out. And coming back home, getting some home cooking in the Bucks with that tied series, hopefully, they'll be home at home in front of their fans, avid home court, rabid fans, and things should really be good. And we can get back right in this thing. And, hey, we came this far. All we got to do is need to win four more games.
So you're not necessarily predicting a win tonight, but you would say that you expect the Milwaukee Bucks to take home the NBA title at the end of this season.
I think they're gonna pull an upset at Phoenix down the road. They're gonna preserve their home court.
There you go.
And then win one there. It's like, you know, who thought that we'd win? We are down 2-0 to the Brooklyn Nets.
Well, and I tell you, Rick, right at that point, I thought this is, and I think, you know, people started talking about Coach Budenholzer from the Milwaukee Bucks and what his future might be. And we started seeing this team described as a good regular season team, but a team that couldn't cut it in the playoffs. And maybe that wasn't unfair after the early exit from the playoffs last season from the NBA bubble and that weird, you know, sort of strange season. But this year, this team has proven that they are good through the regular season, and they may even be better through these playoffs.
They've been resilient. They've bounced back from a number of injuries and things and bad things. Playing a season under COVID alone was difficult, and there's been issues. But the thing is, people were finger wagging, pointing and stuff when they're down 2-0. Did you think, I doubted they'd win it too, to be honest, when you're down that much. but they showed resilience there. And like history repeats itself, I think the same thing can happen here with that being down, or, you know, it's a best of seven series.
Right.
So that whistle wasn't blown at the end of that last game. You're in it.
And those players from the Bucks did not have their head down. They seemed cool, calm, and collected because they've lost the first game of the playoff season series for the last three playoff series this year. So they've been here before. I want to take a moment for the fandom, though, Rick, because this has been fun for me to be a part of. It's been exciting and to see the people take to the in the same way that you took to the auditorium way back in the 70s. People are now taken to the Deer Park outside of Fiserv Forum by the thousands in order to celebrate this team. What have you seen in Milwaukee and these fans?
Well, the thing is that we're supposed to be the most terrible town in the United States, but boy, the fans have always been avid here. The Brewers winning. The Brewers lost the World Series in 1982, but yet still had a huge parade downtown. And I remember somebody saying, boy, I thought they lost. You know, we're not fair weather fans. You can't be in Wisconsin with the cold weather and the blizzards. But we're not fair weather fans here. We'll go out there. You might get rain or something. Yeah, you'll still have people out there. You know, the only thing bad about it probably would be everybody would be hoarse, won't be able to talk at work.
Got to be careful, especially.
Their enthusiasm is so evident that to go out there and to do things like that, and they'll cheer you. They'll never give up.
There were pundits on ESPN that were opining on Milwaukee, and it was clear that they had not been there or seen all that Milwaukee had to offer. And I took that personally because, you know, it's such a great city with such great people. And if you know what to look, where to look and where to go and to shine a spotlight on Milwaukee in a way that we didn't have the opportunity for the DNC convention because of the coronavirus a couple years ago now, I think this is also big for this city and the people throughout the state, Rick. It's exciting to be able to cheer for the Milwaukee Bucks.
Oh, absolutely. And don't forget our Brewers, too.
The first place Milwaukee Brewers.
And they've dealt with issues, too, with injuries and stuff, all the stuff going on. Yeah. And I think that shows the resiliency of these teams currently playing, the Bucks and the Brewers, how they've worked hard to overcome adversity and produce great results on the playing field and on the basketball court.
They're not fair weather teams, Rick. They can't afford to be with weather like this.
Like I said, yeah, we'll shovel to go to the Packers game.
Well, we'll get to the Packers next time, Rick. But for the time being, we've got game two with the Milwaukee Bucks and Phoenix Suns in Phoenix tonight with tip-off at 8 o'clock. The Bucks are down one game in these NBA best of seven finals. And our guest, Rick Schabowski's detailed it all, taking us back all the way to the origins of the Milwaukee Bucks in 1968, their title season in 1971, and the last time they made it to the finals in 1974. Rick Schabowski, always fun with you. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Well, thank you so much for sharing. I absolutely need to share with your listeners. And all I can say is three words, go Bucks, go.
I was going to go with Bucks and six, but we'll see where that takes us. Rick Schabowski, the author of From Coin Toss to Championship. Just ahead, we talk with a law professor who dissected a violent incident in Pittsburgh to find out how fear and racism complicate interactions with police and what reform works and what hurts. We look at reforms being considered around the country next. I'm Lee Rayburn. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.